Okay.
So picking up where we were from last time, just formalized a little bit more my argument about how if you compare matching terms of Cauchy sequences and look at their distance, you get a Cauchy sequence of reals. As we talked about last time, R with the Euclidean metric is complete, meaning that we can go, we have a reversal. Right? In a general metric space like the rationals, Cauchy does not imply convergence, right? There can be holes in the metric space. But the reals are a nice metric space. We call them complete. The two sequence properties, convergent and Cauchy, actually collapse to the same same set of sequences. They don't describe different sets of sequences in this metric space. In a general metric space, there could be different sets of sequences corresponding to these four properties. The collapse to the levels here. Now, last time we were talking about a completion, and what I sketched was how you define it. And I argued that it would be a metric space. I didn't actually give an argument that it would be a complete metric space. Right? Basically, I took one metric space and cooked up a more complicated metric space, but I didn't actually prove that this metric space was somehow better. So that's what we need to fill in. Basically, we need to show that although in this arbitrary metric space, which might be something incomplete like the rationals or a finite open interval of reals, say, you know, something incomplete like that, we're going to extend it, and we want to show that basically the space of Cauchy sequences of points in X, given the natural metric that we talked about last time, is complete. So here would be kind of the informal version. So basically, you want to show that Cauchy sequences of Cauchy sequences can converge. Let's make that more precise. So, what did we do last time? We used the fact that the distances between these sequences are Cauchy, and hence, by completeness, convergent. Okay, so we define a new distance function. First we do the equivalence class mumbo-jumbo, right? So if we have two Cauchy sequences, we consider the sequence of distances between matching points, and that's a convergent sequence because it's Cauchy in the reals. So what's it going to be? In the limit, right? It has to have some limiting distance. So if the limiting distance is 0, then we just say that really these are equivalent sequences, right? 1 over n converges to 0, so does 1 over n squared, so does negative 1 over n, right? They're all different Cauchy sequences going to 0. 5 plus 1 over n goes to 5, so does 5 times the sine of 1 over n times n. All sorts of different weird sequences that converge to 5. But we're going to think of them as all different ways of saying 5. Right? In general, this can be very abstract, just some points kind of the picture is, you know, you've got the, you've got one sequence, does its thing, converges to a point. Then you've got another sequence that does its thing. And maybe your metric space has a hole, but if it does, they're both converging to the same hole. Okay? Now you break everything up into equivalence classes. You break up the set of all the Cauchy sequences into distinct chunks, and each chunk is the chunk of stuff that all converges to the same hole, so to speak, or possibly to an actual point in the metric space. And then we can define a new distance. If they're actually different chunks, then this will come out positive. If these two things came from the same chunk, it would come out zero. Of course, you have to check that this is actually a function, but not hard, right? Two other equivalent sequences, then you look at this, and you notice that this, whatever it is less than or equal to the limit as n goes to infinity of just going the long way, right? So in this case, the long way means go from xn prime to xn. It's kind of like our trapezoid situation here. Now, what happens to this thing? In the limit, this will go to zero. This will go to zero. All right, so this limit on the right side actually does exist because each of the three things we're adding exists. And this goes to d prime. It goes to that thing. We'll call this L, whatever it goes to, right? Call this thing L prime, right? So we've just shown that L prime is less than or equal to L, but the argument is totally symmetrical. I could have put the primes, and I could have switched roles here. Just said it the other way. I could have started with the distance between xn and yn, and I could have gone the long way from xn to xn prime, then to yn prime, then to yn, no prime. Just like here, where I switched the m's and the n, I could have switched the primes and unprimes to get this. So really, if you take equivalent sequences, and you can... They have no effect on these on this new distance function. So this is well defined, right? It's actually a function, right? As long as two things are in the same class, as long as the sequences are converging to the same hole or to the same point, then this won't change what this distance function gives you. Now, we need to say, okay, so what do we, so now how do we make this formal? So we've got this here. is a function, and it is a metric. Okay? Basically, because you're just taking the limit of a sequence of values of a metric. So I talked about that briefly last time. And I didn't have time to say this last time, though I think I snuck it into one of the whiteboard pictures, was the equivalence classes of the constant sequences. Those are an isometric copy of X, right? We have two points, P and Q, and you just repeat those points over and over and over again in two sequences. Then you're just taking the limit of the same distance over and over again. Okay? So you've got a copy there. And so the way I defined D prime last time was I just said, okay, if we want, we could just throw away these equivalence classes and replace them with the actual points, right? And that's the way I defined the distance function last time. It was in cases by, if it was a constant sequence, instead of defining the distance on that, with respect to that sequence, I just defined the distance to the actual point that's being repeated there. So if you make that little modification, then you've actually literally got X a subset of your new metric space. What I almost but not quite had time to say last time was this modification makes X dense. A dense subset. Because everything in our new metric space is a limit of a sequence of points in X. Okay? So if you have any Cauchy sequence, say Y. Cauchy in our old metric space, then consider these distances. In the new metric, right, we define the distance between points in X and now the equivalence class of our Cauchy sequence. So I'm consider one point in this sequence, and then in our newfangled metric, measure the distance to it. What does that mean? Well, I need another letter, right? So by definition, that we're really, this is like the constant sequence. We're just fixing one point, and now here we've actually got the whole sequence, not just repeating one point forever. I already used M or N, so I use M, right? So we just have to go back to our definition of what the distance is. So treating this yn is just the equivalence class of the constant sequence ym. So you measure the sequence yn, constant sequence. Look at that point and measure the distance to all the different points in the sequence. Now I claim this equals zero. Okay. Why? It's not. And you have to think of. Okay. So we know some things, right? We know these limits exist. Those limits exist for all n. That's not a problem because of our corollary over here. Right. That's not a problem. But, okay, that just means I've got, for each n, I take this limit as n goes to infinity, and that gives me some real. Okay, so I've got a bunch of reals. Now I'm taking a limit of those reals, and hopefully I'm going to get zeros. But that, now I need to prove that. Okay. Well, you just have to go back to the definition of Cauchy. So why is it zero? Well, given some epsilon positive, right, we choose k. Such that the sequence is epsilon stable, right? Or, I don't know. I guess we're going to want strictly less than epsilon in a minute, so why don't I make it epsilon over 2 stable? Something like that. Such that, so I'll use different letters, such that for all I and j, at least k, the distance between the ith and jth points in the sequence are less than epsilon over 2. Okay? And then, for all n, at least k, let's look at this limit value here, which we know exists. Okay? So as long as you have sufficiently large n in here, you have that 0 is less than or equal to the distance from y, between y and ym, and that in turn is strictly less than epsilon over 2. Now, you could have a bunch of reals that were a little bit under epsilon over 2, but you could imagine that in the limit they became exactly equal to epsilon over 2. But that's as bad as it could be, right? This is some sequence. We take the limit. We're not going to escape the closed interval 0 to epsilon over 2. So even though we happen to... The actual terms are never hitting the right endpoint, but I'm saying, you know, the worst we could imagine happening in the limit... is that it, you know, it gets as high as epsilon over 2. Okay. Well, that's good enough, right? Because to prove that this limit goes to 0, we just need to show that for n large enough, this inner limit is epsilon close to zero. So eventually, yes, all of those inner limits are epsilon close to zero. Okay. So this makes X dense in our new metric space. Because you've got a sequence of, for any point in our new metric space, it's actually a limit of old points. So it's great. There's no way that you could have an entire non-empty open set avoiding X, right? Because you're always going to be distance zero to X. Because you can get as close as you want to anything in the new space using old points. If you've got a sequence of points from your set X that converges to this new kind of point, then that means that the distance, the set, that kind of set distance, right, from a point, although we have a new kind of point, we've turned the sequence into a point. And this is just the distance to a set is just the greatest lower bound of all the distances to points in the set. And I've shown that you can get as close as you want using old points. So the distance to the old set is zero. And that's exactly what dense means, that you can't get away from this set. You're always infinitely close to it, just like the rationals are dense in the reals. Now, so we've added new stuff, but the stuff we've added, although it's new, it's infinitely close to the old stuff. Right. So we're not adding too much. We really are just filling in the holes. But how do I know that there still aren't more holes after I've done this? That's where we get to this part. Cauchy sequences of Cauchy sequences converge. So next. So now we have to have a sequence of sequences. Okay. Okay, so I'll use superscripts, all right? Simplicity. I don't want to have to deal with the different cases of the argument where I might have to replace a constant sequence equivalence class with just a point, right? That'll simplify the argument. Instead of having to deal with the different cases of whether or not a sequence is equivalent to a constant sequence or not.
You can just go through and, you know, just do cases and say, okay, if it's constant, then replace it. But it doesn't change anything except the complexity of your notation, right? As I said here, it's the constant sequences in our new metric are really just a copy of X. So sometimes it's, sometimes you want to think about X this way. Other times it's easier if you allow X to live more naturally inside your new space as equivalence classes of constant sequences. Right? So we need to cook up a limit of this sequence. So we need to prove that our sequence of sequences, really sequence of equivalence class of sequences, is convergent. So we need to, so somehow we have to take a sequence of sequences and cook up a sequence that is the limit of the sequences. Yeah, because there's the additional annoyance that technically you have to talk about the equivalence classes, otherwise different sequences would have distance zero. But trying to suppress too many details in the essential here. So what have we got? So we have this picture of colors. So you imagine maybe here's the first sequence. I'll think of it as kind of spiraling in towards something or other. You know, and then here's the second sequence spiraling in towards something. But maybe really all the sequences are somehow, they're all. In the limit, though, the distance between these sequences is getting smaller and smaller. So we should have kind of a spiral of spirals, right? Good luck drawing this. Okay. I'm trying. Okay. And so, but you know, really, the problem is, you know, although in the limit they seem to be converging towards some nice little spiraling thing. One, I guess that's supposed to be x5 there. This is x4, and x8 is supposed to be really tight in there. x2, x6 is getting tighter in there. x3. X7 in there. The problem is, at the beginning, although these sequences get really converged, you know, they converge to holes possibly, but they're Cauchy. After finitely many outliers, you have a really tight cloud for each of these, right? And the more outliers you throw away, the tighter you can make the cloud. But early on, things could be terrible. Like this X4 here, it could have lots of points way out here, totally wrong place. And only much, much later does it finally stabilize, you know, around a tight cloud there. Right? It could be a total mess early. So we're gonna if we're gonna cook up a Cauchy sequence from our Cauchy sequence of Cauchy sequences, we're gonna have to have some rule for how we throw away some stuff and only pick points late enough in the sequence to make it all work out. You know, that X6 one, you know, could be really bad in the beginning, but eventually it gets better. Same with the X5. You know, who knows what kind of crazy stuff it does. But eventually, you know, you get some kind of, it's going to be a tight cloud. Then there's an X7 there. Late in the sequence, it's a tight cloud. But early in the sequence, it could be a mess. It could even spend a long time in the wrong place before it finally hops over and then commits to being a tight cloud where it's going to stay. Right? You could wait for a long time, and then the sequence could move and trick you. In general, you know, things could be really bad. be some kind of mess. So we have to throw away the early messy stuff. And the idea is, as we go further along in our, as we go from earlier sequences to later sequences, we want to throw away more and more so that the clouds get tighter and tighter as we go along. So do something like this. For each n, let kn be such that... Now, you don't have to use the axiom of choice here. You can, because you don't have to make an arbitrary choice. You could choose this to be the least possible kn if the axiom of choice bothers you. But in any case, let kn be such that for all I and j greater than or equal to kn, the distance between the ith and jth terms in the nth sequence is small. How small? I don't know. We just need something that's going to zero. So how about less than 1 over n? Okay. I'll do the work. And then we need to argue... Okay, well, so basically starting at term kn, things are getting good for the nth sequence. So let's use the first good term. For the nth sequence to be the nth term of what will be our limit sequence, right? Okay. So now the claim is that we've just constructed a Cauchy sequence, and that and that this sequence converges to it. Really converges to its equivalence class. So that would be the claim. That we can really turn a sequence of Cauchy sequences, well, properly, a Cauchy sequence of Cauchy sequences has within it a limit sequence. You just have to extract sufficiently good terms from individual sequences and then put them together. Right. So there's kind of two things going on there, right? First, we have to show that, for any given epsilon, what do we need to do? We need to show that late terms of this sequence are close together. And then we're also going to need to show that late terms of the sequence of sequences are close in the limit of distances sense close to our target sequence. Okay, so what do we need to find? Well, we need to find some waiting time, I want to call it H, such that for all... What letter should I use now? I'll use I and J. For all I and J, at least H, the distance between yi and yj is less than epsilon. Okay. That's the first part. Okay. That's showing that the new sequence is Cauchy. And that's not too bad. Right. So how are we going to do that? Well, it boils down to going the long way, around some quadrilateral, right? Basically, you rig it so that you end up with four points, but in our situation, we're going to have all four points kind of close together. But the way we'll prove that two points are close together, in this case, yi and yj for I and j large enough, is remember what they are. They come from here, and so it's really we're talking about x, the ith sequence and the k-ith term, right? That's what it is. And this one is you look at the k sub j, the first good term, right, so to speak, of the jth sequence. All right. So how do we know these are close together? Well, the idea is pick anything way, way late in this sequence, okay? In the ith sequence. So how about I'll just call it T, okay? T large. Okay? And then use the same large T over here. Okay. All right. So then how far apart are these? How far apart are these two things? Well, this was the first good point in the sense of, in this sense here. Okay. So for the ith sequence, once you get to this good point, all terms are less than 1 over I apart. And here, you'll have all terms less than 1 over j apart. Okay. As long as you choose t to be at least as big as ki and at least as big as kj. And then, what about this thing here? Well, we know that early on, right, who knows how far apart these two sequences are, but in the limit, as t goes to infinity, what do we get here? We get the distance, we get the limit of distances, right? That d prime distance, right? So if you make t large, then this third leg here is approximately the d prime for xi and xj's equivalence class, right? The distance and the limit. Okay. So what I'll do is I'll choose h large enough that what? Well, I know that this, by hypothesis, in the d prime, limit of distances sense, this sequence of sequences is Cauchy. So I can choose h large enough that for all I and j, at least h, the d prime distance, that limit of distances, is less than, say, epsilon over 3. Okay? And I can also choose h to be large enough that I want these 1 over i's and 1 over j's to also be less than epsilon over 3, right? Because I've got three legs here. If I want to show the distance from here to here is less than epsilon, I just need to make this less than epsilon over 3, and this less than epsilon over 3, and this less than epsilon over 3. And then the whole thing will be less than epsilon. That's what I'm going for. So get the bottom leg less than epsilon over 3. This is where you hop across sequences, right? But we're using the same term t. And then we just have to be late enough in the individual sequences. But how late we are, right? We kind of have to start at the first good point. So we have to pick late sequences where the first good point implies epsilon over 3 goodness, so to speak. So just make 1 over h, big, just make h big enough that its reciprocal is small enough. Then we're good. So if the limiting value here, the d prime, is strictly less than epsilon over 3, then eventually, with a t large enough, the actual limit between the t-th terms will also have to be less than epsilon over 3. So we'll have and so you just use the triangle inequality three times and I guess first so to formalize my picture there, first I have to unpack my definition. And then I have to use I don't have to use the triangle inequality three times. I have to use it twice, right? A rectangle is two triangles.
So this epsilon over 3 type argument you've probably seen before. Maybe the first time you saw it was a proof that a uniformly convergent sequence of continuous functions is again continuous. Maybe you don't remember that. So yeah, this is me trying to be a little more careful in actually formally proving some stuff. I thought I could spare the class time to do a little bit more careful proofs today. So, yes.
Why on the fourth line? I mean, for any ij bigger than 10,
yeah.
And dxi fg less than 1 over n, I think here it should be any epsilon. Why is it 1 over n?
Oh, well, we can't choose the epsilon yet. We're trying to build a Cauchy sequence. So before we have to build a Cauchy sequence, which will have to satisfy that epsilon condition for all epsilon, okay? Right? For a Cauchy sequence has the property that for any epsilon, after finitely many outliers, it's just a cloud of diameter epsilon, or small, right? So I need to build this sequence Y here, right? So my sequence Y is going to have to face up to demands for every positive epsilon. So how am I going to meet those demands? Well, as I go along, I need to make things better and better. Hence the 1 over n there, which is eventually good enough to deal with any epsilon requirement I have to meet. I mean, the problem is, you know, there's uncountably many epsilons, right? There's uncountably many positive reals. But my sequence is just a countable list of things. So I can't hope to handle every epsilon directly. I have to indirectly deal with all the epsilons by using a countable set of epsilons. The 1 over n's, for example, will work.
There's nothing special about 1 over n there. You could have used 2 to the minus n or any sequence of positive reals that goes to 0 in the limit. Is that what you're getting at? Sort of?
I know here it should be less than some small number. But here it makes sense, I know. I will think after class.
Okay. if I was going to put it in my picture, I would say something like, you would grab a cloud. I mean, you'd grab a cloud of radius 1, right? Or diameter 1. Then you'd grab a cloud of diameter 1/2. Then a cloud of diameter 1/3. Then a cloud of diameter 1/4, right? Then a cloud of diameter 1/5, diameter 1/6, diameter 1/7, diameter 1/8, right? That's the idea. And then you're just taking the first point in your sequence from each of these increasingly narrow clouds, and that's what you're using to make your shiny new sequence. You know, so I could, maybe there's a star there, a star there. Whatever point comes first in the sequence after you've thrown away a bunch of early outliers, right?
Yes, and here we are trying to prove its cozy sequence, right?
Yes.
Well,
the 1 over n is part of the definition of the sequence, right? I mean, that's where the 1 over n, you know, is how you pick a kn, and that's how we define the sequence.
We try to make the limits to get close to some point.
Yeah, and I think I've got the argument. I mean, I have the picture. I was just about to write, you know, write down this part.
Are we done with the convergence?
This is the proof that we have a Cauchy sequence. We have not proven this part. We haven't proven that part yet. So the Cauchy part is just proving we actually have a legitimate point, right? That is Cauchy, right? Because our new metric space is made up of equivalence classes of Cauchy sequences. So to prove that our sequence of sequences is converging to a new kind of point, we have to find a Cauchy sequence for it to converge to. Right? So this is sort of building the point, so to speak, because now the points are more complicated objects, right? Okay, so just cashing out this argument here, triangle inequality. So we go to some x on t. So here we're in this sequence, and we go to a later point in the same sequence. Now we hop across to the jth sequence, and then in the jth sequence we go from this really late point to that first good point. And then this thing. Well, this term here is less than or equal to. If you make t large enough, this can be as close as you want to the d prime distance, right? But how close? So, well, the point is, you could have the d prime distance plus some delta as small as you need, right? But for any positive delta, you could get this term to be less than the limiting distance, right? Plus some positive delta, provided t is large enough, right? And what do we want delta to be? We just want delta to be the basically the leftover part, right? We know that d prime distance, but by our choice of h, is under epsilon over 3. So we have a little bit of breathing room, right?
So for a T large enough, we can take advantage of that room. Okay? Since this is actually positive, you can get closer than delta to that limit distance. Which means that this whole thing here, we set up, it's gonna, this is less than epsilon over 3. This is equal to epsilon over 3. And this is less than epsilon over 3. So the whole thing is less than 3 epsilons over 3. So that's the standard kind of epsilon over 3 argument, as it's sometimes called. You want to show that two things are close together. You approximate each of those things by something else. And if your approximations are good, and then the things you're approximating by are close together, then you conclude that the original two things are close together. In other words, you build the quadrilateral, and you show that you've got 3 short sides, therefore the 4th side is also short. Okay, that proves Cauchy. So now, convergence. Okay, so now, similar requirements. Given epsilon positive, we need to find some cutoff value. Say I've already used H. How about L? Okay. We need to find some cutoff value L, some finite wait time, such that for all n, at least L, the d prime distance of the nth sequence to the y sequence, which we've shown is Cauchy, so this is all legit now. It does have a well-defined limit distance, right? And of course, really, we're talking about distance between equivalence classes, but for what we're trying to prove here, that's not important. The way you get traction is by working with particular sequences, not the whole equivalence class. Okay. So how are we going to get this? So basically, we want to think about, having a large term, some S large. I mean, what is this guy here? This is the limit, right? And as s goes to infinity of the distance in the original sense, in the original metric space, of term s of the nth sequence and term s of the y sequence. And that's what that is by definition. So we need to show that for s large, we've got these things. We want to have this. What's going on here? So we have x sub n sub s. What does y sub s mean? Well, the way we define the y sequence, we have x, and then for the so we look at the s sequence, right? Sequence number s, term number k sub s, the first good term of sequence s. One problem here, is of course that the that s itself, right, is changing, right? So we're trying to deal with a bunch of different possibly very large s. So can use the fact that we have Y a Cauchy sequence.
Okay.
So we're going to try and build one of those quadrilaterals again. So maybe we look at maybe that L itself can be kind of like an anchoring good point, right? And then what would we compare it to over here? Well, we would need to move over how about we move over to the make the S's match. So if we could do that, and we could get these three sides all small, then we'd be good. Okay, so we'd want this, this, and this all less than epsilon over 3. That's what we'd need. So just by the earlier claim that we just proved that the Y sequence is Cauchy, if you make L large enough, and then S is also large, then these will have to be close together. So that's no problem. Now, then here, how are we going to deal with this? Well, we know that if S is at least, say, k sub L, then this distance here, whatever it is, will be less than 1 over L. So we'll just need to have that be under epsilon over 3. No, wait, that's... Yes, that's right. Sorry, I was getting confused. But yeah, we're not hopping sequences. We're in sequence L. We're just going later in time to a later term of the same sequence. Okay, so that's no problem. We can do that. This, we're using the fact that Y is Cauchy. And what about this one? So here we're making a sequence hop, right? But it's a hop that happens at a very late term, as late as we want it to be. Okay, so here, to get this small, we have to use the fact that the sequence of sequences are really sequences of equivalence classes of sequences, right, was Cauchy in that limit sense. Right? So that's how we get the third leg, this small. And so then we'll put it all together and we'll get this. Now, actually, there's a slight complication in that if you want this limit to be strictly less than epsilon, then approximations using large S that are less than epsilon are not good enough, because maybe in the limit it becomes exactly epsilon. So to make that technical annoyance go away, you just have to shrink something a little bit. How about we make this last one less than epsilon over 4? Then it'll add up to strictly less than epsilon, and so even in the and it'll be, but not only strictly less than epsilon, it'll actually add up to like what 11/12 epsilon, strictly less than, and even if in the limit it became exactly 11/12 epsilon, we'd still be okay. Okay, so it is enough to show that for all S large enough, this distance is, say, less than, well, yeah. For all S large enough and all n, at least L, right? We haven't said what L is yet. We have to find the L, but we're on our way to doing that. So for all n, at least L, and for all s
large enough. How should I write this? I guess large enough. You have to be careful here. I should write the, because large enough could depend on n maybe, right? Right. We know that in the limit, the n sequence and the l sequence will get close together, say, right? But depending on what n is, will affect how big you make S to make these sequences be, you know, the terms of these sequences actually get close together, because these distances between sequences are limit distances. So we need to show that for all N, at least L, for all S large enough, and where large enough, I'll just annotate it saying that depends on n. Right? But when we make the limit here, right, it'll depend on n. So we need to find an L such that for all n at least L, and for all s large enough, so computing the limit thing here, right, we're going to be taking a limit of s's here. So if we can just show that S the larger. We just need to show then that this distance is strictly bounded away, so like less than or equal to, say, what was I saying? 11 epsilon over 12, for example. Right. Which is, you know. Because now, even in the limit, if it becomes exactly 11 twelfths epsilon, that's still strictly less than epsilon, which is what we need. We need this limit to be strictly less than epsilon. So we just need to show that you can have something a little bit under epsilon that it never surpasses. So, I mean, I guess even if you had just weak inequality there, that's good enough. Perhaps from the most delicate part there, because we're trying to prove, you know, instead of, in this version you're just trying to prove that a distance is less than epsilon. Now you're trying to prove a limit of distances is less than epsilon. So that's what makes it more delicate. All right. So okay. All right. So how do we choose the end? So we just have to make it large enough to satisfy the three requirements. So how about 1 over L is, say, less than epsilon over 3. Even less than or equal to less than or equal to epsilon over 3 would be good enough. This one... So, what do you need here? Well, here you need this gets back to Y being Cauchy, right? Okay. So, for all I and J, at least L, use the fact that we've already shown Y is Cauchy, so we're going to use that fact. So you get that. And then your third one, which I rounded down to epsilon over 4. So for this one, for all I and J, at least L, we're taking advantage of the Cauchiness of the sequence of sequences now.
And so then the argument is much like what I did there. You know, you can let say delta be epsilon over 4 minus that d prime distance. Positive, set that up, and then you choose S big enough, right? So what do you need? Before you choose S, we have to say what N we're dealing with, right? Okay, so given some N, at least L, I need to show that this limit is under epsilon, which just means for S large enough, I have this. Okay, so I need to show that if S, how large is large enough? Well, if you have S at least, at least KL here, and over, how's over? Yeah, this part. If your S is at least KL, this gives you the 1 over L business for this part in the Lth sequence, because that's where the Lth sequence starts getting good. And then here, you need S at least L in order for these sequences to be close together. Right? That comes here, right? Starting in L, the y terms are close together. And then, but that these two requirements might not be enough. You need to make S possibly larger. Since you have this limit distance here under epsilon over 4, you can get then the distance between X, L, S, and X, and S to be less than delta plus that d prime distance, right? So that's the third large enough, and that's where the part where large enough depends on N now, right? Because for different N's, how fast this sequence gets close to its limit distance from that sequence, you know, the wait times could be different. There's no way around that part. Okay. So there's just some number here. Eventually, this will be good. It'll never be bad again. So once this is satisfied, and once these are satisfied, then it's just that picture. So distance x n s equals distance x n s x l s. And this part here, remember, this is exactly epsilon over 4. So this part is good. So if we get to XLS, then go over to XLKL, which would be the number L, and then the last one, where we go to we finally get to sequence number S. Remember, this is just YL, and this is just YS. And so this part, we got that to be under epsilon plus 4, because it's close enough to the limit distance, which is under epsilon plus 4, plus this one. This is all in sequence L, so we know eventually through sequence L, starting at term KL, everything is less than 1 over L apart. And then the last one, this one, the Y's are Cauchy, and so we got them, we wait long enough for them to be epsilon number 3 close together forever. Throw away the finite many outliers. And then this is now. That's what we needed. Okay. Now, this is why I don't prove everything in detail. I spend the whole class on big proofs.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions or comments?
It's fun to do a big proof when I have the time. I generally feel like I don't have the time for it, but when I can justify the time use, it feels good to do a big proof, see everything work out. And that's what I did in the Czech Republic. They gave me 3 50-minute slots, so like the second slot and half of the third slot was all just like a giant proof from one of my papers. Two kinds of mathematicians. Some mathematicians like to see actual proofs when they go to talks and follow them carefully. Other mathematicians, they don't want that. They just want, to get a light touch and get them just hear the main ideas, and then they'll decide if they want to go back and read a paper or read a book to get the details of the proof, or maybe they want to figure out the details of the proof on their own, just given some high-level ideas. Most conference talks you'll go to, most conference talks I've gone to, where I've gotten to speak, have been short, so there was no choice. There wasn't time for a detailed proof. Just high-level ideas, samples, pictures, and then you're done.